All right, so insect vectors of plant disease are, I think, a well-known problem for most of us in the room. Not only do we have insects eating our crops, they're eating them and then infecting them with lethal diseases. In our rush to confront this, we tend to focus on a strict set of very important questions. So what's the economic injury level? Are there resistant plants? Are there control agents? Basically, how do we kill it? But in the process, we can lose track of some of the ecological perspectives. So, for instance, how is it adaptive for
association between the two biotypes here on the z-axis and the four symbionts found in Israel, the secondary symbionts. And here you see the frequency of the presence of these symbionts. You can see very clear that the Arsinophonus and Wolbachia are always associated with the Q biotype. They are not found in the B biotype. Hamiltonella is there is about 100% infection in the B biotype, and it's not found in the Q. And Rickettsia is found in both. So this is the triangle that we have been studying for many years now, and we know also from studies in Spain that the Q biotype the B and the Q biotype can transmit the virus, and even the Q biotype is more efficient in transmitting the TYLCV in Spain than the B biotype. It was found that the growing ill protein, it's a chaperon, is involved in transmission. The growing ill is produced by symbiotic bacteria in Bemisia, and it can bind a coat protein of this virus, TYLCV, and it is essential for transmission of the virus. If you feed the insects with antibiotics, you can prevent or reduce to very to about 90% the transmission of the virus. These facts are known from the aphid, the Bocnera, which is the primary symbiont of aphids. Potato leaf rail virus that was done by a group in Holland a few years ago. The system that we are working with, and we believe it works basically the same, is the whitefly TYLCV symbiont interactions, which is we believe is Hamiltonella. And why we believe that? Because when we did the immunogold labeling a few years ago, we showed that there is a specific localization using anti-Bocnera growing ill in bacteriosomes of the whitefly. Localization targets basically Hamiltonella because this is a B biotype. Our postulation is that if we clone different growing ills from different bacteria in Bemisia, they should have different abilities to bind the virus or the coat protein of the virus. So the different bacteria should affect the transmission of the virus differently. If you have different biotypes, then the different biotypes that have different bacteria should transmit the virus differently also. So what we basically did, we first identified other growing ill sequences besides the one that was known before, and tested the ability of these growing ills to bind coat protein in vitro, and then testing that the ability of the different Bemisia populations to transmit the virus. So here it's a table that is showing six essential amino acids that were identified from the aphid Bocnera P. larvae system. And these six amino acids were identified to be essential for the interaction between the growing ill from Bocnera and the potato leaf roll virus coat protein. And this is the sequence that was published a few years ago by our lab also, the lab that I did the PhD in. And it shows the conservation of these amino acids. And basically it was shown also that the Groyel from this secondary symbiont can interact with the coat protein of TYLCV. Now, what we did recently, we cloned another two Groyels from Portiera, the primary symbiont, and Rickettsia, a secondary symbiont. And you can see that there is a difference in the sequences, and basically you would expect that these two Groyels would not bind the coat protein. So we used a yeast to hybrid system to basically check this hypothesis, and what we did we cloned the coat protein of the virus in one plasmid of this system that is fused to a binding domain, and the Groyel that we are testing to an activating domain. And basically, if you have interaction between the two proteins, this cascade of leucine biosynthesis will be activated, and then yeast transformed with these two plasmids will grow on a medium without leucine. And this is what you see here. The TYLCV coat protein, Amiltonella Groyel, that we did a few years ago, it's interacting and the yeast can grow, and the Portiera Groyel does not interact with the coat protein of the virus, and the yeast cannot grow. And then we did transmission experiments between the B and the Q biotypes. Now, I remind you that the B has the Hamiltonella and the Q does not have the Hamiltonella, which is, we think, is involved in the transmission. And you see here an experiment where we got about 60% transmission in the B and zero in the Q. Well, the picture wasn't so nice afterwards. We did another experiment. We got about 30% transmission in the Q and 50 in the B. And then we said we will do another experiment. And we got 30% in the B, zero in the Q. And then this is not very high rate of transmission in the B. And then we are doing this a fourth time just to be sure. And that's it. We believe that Amiltonella is involved. It is the only symbiont involved in the transmission. And if the Q transmits the virus, then it's just because the virus can move in the hemolymph without the help of the Groyel. And these are collaborators. I would like to thank all of them. Thanks.
And our funding agencies who have paid most of my salary for 2 years. So this species is a galechid, like the pink bollworm. It's a rather nondescript moth with characteristic black markings on the wings. The larvae are leaf, stem, and petiole miners. But in the absence of foliage, they will infest tubers, as you can see. And that's a concern for growers because there tends to be a low tolerance for the fresh market, at least. And the moths, in the absence of foliage, the moths will even go into cracks in the ground and lay eggs. The host range is known host ranges within the Solanaceae, so it includes tomatoes and peppers and tobacco. And there are also some weed hosts, such as nightshade and jimson weed, which probably cause a source of infestation in cropping areas. And this pest is actually a recent introduction to the Pacific Northwest. And currently, there's quite a concern. There's a pheromone trapping network. The website is indicated here. That's through Oregon State University and the Potato Commission. And they have several thousand traps in the Columbia Basin and beyond to sort of monitor and hopefully prevent its spread. And this is a slide I got from the International Potato Center in Peru. You can see its movement northwards. I think that may reflect it becoming more cold adapted. Its center of origin is, along with the potato, is the Bolivian Andes. So it's interesting to speculate about host strain selection, cold tolerance. I know that Sylvia Rondon at OSU is doing some work on that. So this project, these are the objectives: to work on the in vitro production of the virus, and also the control strategies we looked at, both under field and storage conditions. And they weren't true field studies, we had cages, I'll come on to that. This is a SEM of the granules, which look a little bit like potatoes, or as our research leader calls them, tater tots. And then this is a schematic of the infection process I won't go through. I'm sure you've heard that many times in this meeting. And this is a stain, a DNA stain of a larvae, a male larvae. You can see large extent of infection. But it's kind of curious. I worked on another granulovirus for codling moth. This is a little different. This is the infected larvae. You can see it actually survives, fails to pupate, which is the effect of mortality. But other than that, it's a little sluggish. But this virus doesn't seem to code for proteinase and chitinase, so the larvae doesn't lyse very easily. And this is just a quick schematic of the virus production process. We typically inoculate tubers with the virus, infest tubers that have been inoculated with the virus. The larvae can be collected and either stored for control or for further experimentation, and also used to produce more virus. And the simplest way is just to pulverize them, dilute them in suspension, and use that to inoculate further tubers. And we found that the optimum rate is about 5 affected larvae per liter of water for this. So there's a couple of pictures of our field setup. We ran this experiment in 2006 and 2007. We had these 1 meter cubed field cages, which we infested between, 42 to 52 days post-planting. And we applied our first sprays against the neonates. And we found that we got about 2 generations per season in this area, in the Pacific Northwest. And so all of the treatments I'll talk about, they were applied at between 7 and 14 day intervals with a compressed carbon dioxide sprayer. I don't have a picture of that there. At 500 liters per hectare. And the sampling intervals were typically at the end of the first and second larval generations, which corresponded to about early growth stage 4 and 5 of the potatoes. So here's data. This is 2006 harvest data I'm just going to show you. Here are our treatments. This is our virus high rate weekly.